We'll call the Senate Finance meeting to order this morning. Please silence all cell phones. The time is 9:08 a.m., February 27th, 2024, Tuesday. I'm joined by Co-Chair Hoffman, Co-Chair Stedman, Senator Wilson, Senator Keel, and Senator Merrick. Senator Cliff Bishop is joining us at this present time. He's away on other state business. I want to acknowledge that Senator Geisel is also in the room. We have three bills on our agenda this morning. Senate Bill 105 by the Transportation Committee, Senate Bill 125 by the Governor, Senate Bill 205 by Senator Kaufman. First bill up is Senate Bill 105, Alaska Railroad Financing, Seward Cruise Dock by the Senate Transportation Committee. This is its first hearing. We'll ask Emma Torkelson, the staff, to Senator Kaufman, come on up to the table and go ahead and present the bill to us, please. Identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson and members of the Senate Finance Committee. For the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman and the Senate Transportation Committee. Senator Kaufman sends his apologies that he can't be here this morning. The Alaska Railroad Corporation owns and operates a passenger dock and an associated intermodal terminal facility in Seward, Alaska. These facilities serve cruise ships, other passengers, some freight vessels, and the community of Seward, and overall supports tourism in South Central Alaska, interior, and beyond. The current passenger dock was built in 1966 and is now well past its design life expectancy. Until the dock can be replaced, weight restrictions have been imposed to ensure that the dock can still be used safely. Further degradation of the dock will lead to increased restrictions, placing limits on both people and people coming through Seward and the revenue that they bring with them. The railroad and their long-term cruise line partner, Royal Caribbean Group, have developed a replacement plan for the dock that will meet Seward and Royal Caribbean's growing passenger needs in Seward. Senate Bill 105 will allow the Railroad Corporation, along with Royal Caribbean as their anchor tenant, to issue up to a total of $135 million in revenue bonds for the Seward Dock and Terminal Replacement Project. Mr. O'Leary with the Railroad Corporation will speak more to this during his presentation, but this bill authorizes $75 million in additional revenue bonds, in addition to the $60 million that was authorized in 2022 by this legislature. The previous legislature, giving them a total of up to or not to exceed $135 million. The railroad is looking to finalize their construction plans and timeline this year, which makes the passage of this bill within this session a priority for both the railroad and Royal Caribbean Group. Once the dock is functioning at full and expanded capacity, it will be a guaranteed source of revenue for the railroad to service the debt for Seward and for the surrounding area for many years to come. Per the railroad statute, the state will not be liable for any of these funds or for any of these bonds. I'm ready to go through the bill's two sections, if that's what the committee wills. But we also have Bill O'Leary and Preston Carnahan from Royal Caribbean Group to go through a short presentation.
Do you have any questions from Ms. Torkelson, my member of the Finance Committee? I've got a question. One of the questions I have is that you've already got $60 million that have been put out there for revenue bonds. What's been done with that money so far?
Through the chair, to the co-chair, Olson, no funds have been bonded thus far. They're waiting for an additional amount to pursue a larger and expanded project.
Versus the 75.
Mm-hmm. For a total of $135 million.
And is that going to be enough to go ahead and complete the dock?
That's what the railroad says. They can speak more to it when they come up. But yes, that will allow them to pursue this expanded dock project.
And then what's the when do you think the dock's going to be functional?
To the chair, they expect the project to be completed in FY26 or 2026.
2026, okay.
Excuse me.
If there's no further question by members of the committee, go ahead with your sectional analysis, please.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson. Again, for the record, Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman and the Transportation Committee. Section 1 amends uncodified law to authorize the Railroad Corporation to issue a total of $135 million in revenue bonds to finance the replacement of the railroad's passenger dock and terminal facility in Seward. And Section 2 sets an immediate effective date. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Is that it? Okay. Well, thank you very much for coming on up. Do we have any questions on the sectional analysis by members of the committee? If not, we'll go ahead and start with invited testimony. First up is Mr. Bill O'Leary, as well as Preston Carnahan. Please come up and identify yourself for the record and go with the presentation.
Good morning. For the record, my name is Bill O'Leary. I'm the President and Chief Executive Officer of the Alaska Railroad Corporation. And with me here today, I'll allow him to introduce himself here shortly, is Preston Carnahan from Royal Caribbean Lines, Royal Caribbean Group. Also on the phone, we have Michelle Maddox, who is our Chief Financial Officer for the Railroad. We have Clark Hopp, our Chief Operating Officer, and Brian Lindemood, our Vice President of Engineering and Chief Engineer, just in case there are questions going forward. Very much appreciate the opportunity to be here today. Appreciate the opportunity to talk about a project that we're actually very excited about and really offer our full support for Senate Bill 105. And as Ms. Torkelson said, the reason we are here today is the railroad, before it can issue public debt or bonds, legislative authorization or approval is required. And we did receive such an authorization for $60 million in 2022. And you know, at that point, we were still, as I sometimes like use the phrase, flying the plane while we were building it, or building the plane while we were flying it. The scope had not been completely nailed down, nor had some of the impacts of construction inflation that we had been experiencing been fully vetted out. So historically, we took a what I would characterize as a strategic pause a little over a year ago, which allowed us to sit and really help and work through, develop exactly what the scope needs to be, come up with a new model, a new approach on this particular project, which is why we come here today with the request for the incremental $75 million of bond authorization. As noted earlier, the railroad has, actually we have three docks in Seward, Alaska. And we have our previously, currently unused coal dock. We have a freight dock, which is the subject of a different capital project to widen and lengthen that dock to make it certainly more robust for continued growth there. And we have our passenger dock. And the passenger dock is a critical link not only for Seward, but also not only for the railroad, but also for really the entire visitor industry in Alaska. In that linkages to Southeast, linkages certainly to getting folks to South Central and then up into the interior by rail, by motor coach, or by you know, other means of transportation. This dock, this passenger dock, is at nearing the end of its life. It is still safe to use, but it is something that the end of life is near. We are putting significant funds into it this year and next just to keep it in safe operating condition until this new dock can be christened, for lack of a better term, in you know, April 2026 time frame. So this is something, again, that I think is very important to a number of different stakeholders within Alaska here. It's all in a total of $137 million project, and it will be funded through it will be funded through a combination of railroad equity, which is actually funds that have been collected and will be collected over the next couple of years related or from cruise line companies through you know, what we call an improvement fee that has been in place since 2022. That's going to generate the railroad portion of the cash that goes into this, and then also tax-exempt bonds, which is the reason we're here today, that will take up the remainder of that, of the funding needed to complete the project here. We have the alignment with our anchor tenant, Royal Caribbean Group. We have a scope that works, and we have support from the stakeholders that this will most directly impact here. And I'll close with just saying, kind of repeating what Ms. Torkelson brought up. By statute, this is not a debt of the state. No state monies can be used to repay these bonds. They're revenue bonds based upon the Alaska Railroads, actually based upon the dock revenues and generated by the facility itself. And again, the security for this debt will be a long-term berthing agreement with the Royal Caribbean Group as our anchor tenant. So that really concludes my relatively brief remarks. I note that I did not go through the presentation here, which I guess is it's relatively light. Talks a little bit about the replacement there. This is really the main slide talking about the timing that we are looking at currently. So I certainly am available for questions, or Mr. Carnahan from Royal Caribbean Group can speak also.
Do we have any questions for Mr. O'Leary by members of the Finance Committee? Senator Stedman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was wondering if you could help remind the committee on cost escalators in this project. I think it's been before us before we've looked at this, and what have you faced in the marketplace on changes to increase these costs?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, certainly there was significant escalation just as what we've experienced in almost all of the capital projects that the railroad has undertaken over the past 3 or 4 years, significant amounts. But there was also a change in scope that I think was designed really to meet the needs, better meet the needs of what our anchor tenant required. And the only other point I'd make about that is this dock, while being designed, or while certainly having Royal Caribbean Group as the anchor tenant, will be used and can be used by other cruise lines out there, and is really being, the impetus for this, as well as just the fact that the current dock is failing, is to be able to bring in larger ships that are the larger ships that are going to be coming across the Gulf here, which currently this dock could not support, even if it was in healthy condition.
Bob, Senator Stedman?
I got another one.
Senator Bishop?
Well, I don't want to get, I know what Senator Stedman is going to ask, and I'll let that one go, but I do have a question. When you were here before us in 22, I'm sorry I came in late. I was in another meeting. But this is going to be a dual-purpose dock as well? The freight's still going to be able to come over here?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, this will be a dock. Its primary purpose will be, a floating dock designed for the cruise industry. That said, as the developer is still working through exactly what they would, how the final design will be, taking account inputs from different groups about being able to use it certainly for other purposes. As designed right now, my understanding, and again, Mr. Carnahan could probably speak to this better than I can, this will be available for quote-unquote light freight. It will not be something that will, the heavier freight would be something that we would anticipate being over at our freight dock, which is right next door. And again, as I mentioned, the subject of a, lengthening and widening capital project that we have ongoing right now also.
Thank you. I'll yield and see what Senator Stedman's follow-up is.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Just we have a couple comments. Can you talk upon why the difference between the going to a floating dock from the fixed dock that's currently there?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, that's what the customer wants. That is what the customer is bringing to us as the preferred alternative.
Okay. And
follow-up, Senator Wilson.
Do we plan to have any other users of other, I don't want to say competing cruise ships, but any other customers that may choose to want the latter?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson. So yeah, there are a number, if I understand the question correctly, there are a number of other cruise lines currently calling on Seward at this point, and we hope to have them continue. Every indication that they will continue to call on Seward. Royal Caribbean at this point is the group that will be signing up for a long-term agreement. The others at this point do not have those long-term agreements in place.
Bottom, Senator Wilson.
Thank you.
Senator Stedman.
Okay, just for clarity, and then I got a question. I think for clarity, with the long-term agreement, you have preferential mortgage.
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, certainly there will be some benefits to Royal Caribbean for being the anchor tenant on something like this. But again, the intent from the railroad's perspective is that this is an open dock that will be available for other users.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman.
Pretty slippery answer. Electrification of the dock and ongoing needs there. You've got a proposal here for a floating dock, but we are in need of shoreside power to the cruise ships. So what's the plans in this project to electrify the ships?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, if it's okay, I would like to actually ask Mr. Carnahan to address that, as he's much more adept at that than I am.
Mr. Carnahan, go ahead and identify yourself for the record. Do you need the question to be rephrased?
For the record, Preston Carnahan, Royal Caribbean Group, Regional Vice President of Development. Through the chair, could you repeat the question, Senator?
Well, look, the core question is electrification. There is a need to lower the emissions from the cruise ships to also extend their stay in ports so you don't have to slow your ships down between ports. And here we're looking at putting in a new facility. We're looking at electrifying Ketchikan and several other ports. So what's the, in this proposal, what's the thoughts in the direction of electrifying this facility so your ships can turn off their generators when you're in port?
Carnahan.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. So it is our intention and part of the budget to provide dock electrification for the ships while they're in port in Seward. So there are a couple of components to that. One is on the utility side, to have to work with them to provide the power. Through those discussions, our understanding is that the power is available on their production end. So the facility itself is able and capable to be outfitted with shore power. And so it will be our intention to provide that power to the ships. Our ships are capable of accepting that today, that we plan on bringing to Seward.
So Mr. Carnahan, you're going to have 240 three-phase going out to the ships?
Chairman Olson, not sure on the technical details of that. We have a team who provides those specifications through a couple dozen different projects around the world. So our understanding is that the power supplied can accommodate it and that our ships can handle it.
Senator, follow-up, Senator Stedman?
Yeah, so just for clarity, we understand the preferential mortgage arrangements through an anchor tenant and the business relationship that you would have with the railroad. So I think that should be just being right up front with the public of what's going on. That's standard within the industry. There's nothing exceptional about it, from what I can see. But I want to be clear on, is this electrification going to be put in the installation of this dock, or is it just in concept to be followed up later? Or is it included in this request for the bonding capacity, and it's all in one big package? And then and how many ships can this dock take? I see in the schematic there's one ship, but it'd be on both sides. And are the ships capable now? Touch on that. Is the capability of the ships been able to plug into either port or starboard?
Mr. O'Leary, you can answer that question, or Mr. Carnahan to do it.
Certainly To the chair, I'd certainly like Mr. Carnahan to start, and I may have a comment at the end.
Mr. Carnahan, please.
Through the chair. So the dual-sided pier will accommodate two of the larger ships in Alaska simultaneously. The project budget fully includes the electrification of the dock in the scope, and so that is not a concept. That's something that we're planning on doing as part of the project. And I'm sorry, what was the follow-up question?
Yes, on the ships, I've got the impression that some of the older ships only have facilities to plug in on one side, port or starboard. And if you're going to have a two-sided dock, I'm just kind of curious how that's going to be handled with the older ships. And then also it would be nice to hear from the utility on their capacity to deliver 10 megawatts or whatever you're going to need if it's five per ship. I think that's what we're thinking about in Ketchikan, is about five per ship or some number in that range. That's a significant load. We need to be updated on the capacity to deliver that, because I think it's critical that the ships do get plugged in up and down the coast. I think the one in Juneau here was the first one in America, I think, that was plugged in to hydro.
Senator Stedman, we do have the city manager of the city of Seward here. She might be able to answer that question better than these two people that don't even live there. With that, go ahead with your presentation, Mr. Carnahan.
Through the chair, my presentation was along with Mr. O'Leary, which is on the screen now.
Okay. Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. O'Leary, has the project been designed, or if not, why wasn't the design done between 2022 and part of that $60 million bond authorization? It seems as though we're, if it hasn't been designed, we really don't know what the true costs might be.
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. No, that's a fine question. And the project has been designed. There are certainly, it is a point that certainly some modifications can still be made if there are things about, as an example, strengthening gangways, doing things of that nature, but I would characterize as more minor changes. But there is a plan, there is a design for the project at this point, to the point that constructor is, which really brings us to why this authorization is needed this year. They're looking to move forward and start the procurement of materials and what they need to actually begin this process.
Bob, Senator Hoffman.
Yes, I think everyone at the table understands the debacles that we've seen at the Port of Anchorage. And we still don't know what the true costs are there, but do you have a more detailed breakdown of how the $70 million would be spent instead of a one-liner,
Mr.
for the committee?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. So the arrangement that is currently being finalized between the developer and the Alaska Railroad, excuse me, is more of a real estate type of transaction, in that there is no construction risk to the Alaska Railroad. The developer will build this dock, and then for a price certain, the railroad will purchase this dock. So there is no construction risk as to what it will be. $137 million will be $137 million to the Alaska Railroad.
So, Mr. O'Leary, to make sure that we don't, so who's going to oversee the quality control of that dock, so we don't get in the situation we got with the Port of Anchorage several years ago?
Senator Olson, or Chair Olson, the railroad will be involved from the perspective of ensuring that, up front, the design meets the needs for the railroad, who will be owning this dock at the end of this transaction. And then also there would be involvement throughout the construction of it, just to ensure that what is designed and what is planned is actually what's being done.
Senator Bishop. I'm sorry, follow-up, Senator Hoffman.
Thank you. To follow through with that, the dock is going to be designed and built and eventually owned by the state of Alaska. It seems as though the state of Alaska, if we're going to end up with the product, there are maintenance issues and operational issues. What involvement does the state have? And it seems as though we should be more involved if eventually it's going to be a state asset.
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. Well, we agree, certainly. And I mean, you know, one of the major things that we want to be very aware of is what is going to be the O&M on this going forward? What is going to be the operations maintenance that we're going to, the railroad will assume? So we're highly motivated to make sure we understand exactly what is being proposed here and that it's constructed in the manner that, we all agree to at the end here. Because at the end of the day, just like buying any asset, then we're the owner and we're going to have to take care of it. And the long-term cost of that is certainly going to reside with the Alaska Railroad. That said, the arrangement that we are working through with Royal Caribbean Group, you know, will contain a provision for funding of that type of arrangement.
And that brings us to this committee, which has the fiduciary responsibility to the citizens of Alaska. A lot of the operation and maintenance depends on the design. And for our due diligence, it seems as though we need to see that the operation and maintenance costs are minimized as much as possible. And in order for us to do that, it seems as though more thought and presentation besides a 10-page spreadsheet to justify the authorization for $70 million seems premature, as was the railroad's presentation of the original authorization when they came to us in 2022. So I feel a little bit reluctant to give the approval for our fiduciary responsibilities on this presentation without getting further information and doing our so-called due diligence. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Can you comment on that, Mr. O'Leary?
Through the chair, Senator Hoffman. No, I certainly understand. And as I mentioned, this is something that the railroad is very concerned with because, again, it's the railroad will be responsible for the maintenance of this facility going forward. So it's incumbent on us to gain that understanding of what those costs are going to be. Of course, that would not in any way, shape, or form ever bleed over into the state other than through the Railroad Corporation, because just based on the model that the railroad has at this point. That said, we can certainly, we do have our chief engineer online here who can certainly speak to what, generally what the dock design is, what the maintenance look that we have at this particular point. But we can also, you could do that and then also follow up with something more detailed if that's what the committee would like.
Senator Hoffman,
I don't know if that's, I would like to see that in the future, but you wouldn't be here, Mr. O'Leary, if you had the authorization to proceed. You talk about the Alaska Railroad owning this, sure, but who owns Alaska Railroad? The state of Alaska and the citizens. So you might speak on behalf of the railroad, but you're here today because you need the authorization of the legislature. And ultimately, we are the ones that are responsible for that and to make sure that you're operating smoothly and as efficiently as possible. That is our responsibility, so I feel that more information is needed to satisfy my due diligence. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Mayor, and as you pointed out before, more information to the committee would certainly smooth the things going along. Senator Merrick has a question.
Thank you, Chair Olson. Good morning, gentlemen. Does Seward ever have more than two cruise ships in port? And if so, will this dock have the ability to accept tenders?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chairs, Senator Merrick, Seward does at times have more than two cruise ships dock. And with that, for lack of a better term, that overflow, we handle directly at our freight dock.
Thank you.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you. I want to go back to Senator Stedman's question about 10 minutes ago. And inside this number here, what is it, 135 that you're asking for? What have you built in a percentage of contingency fee?
Mr. O'Leary.
For overruns?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, again, given the model that we're using at this point, it is a fixed price contract with the railroad, between the railroad and the developer. So my ability to speak to what they have on their side, but I know what the liability is capped for the Alaska Railroad on this.
Thank you.
Bishop.
So you talked about oversight on the project of the construction, and you've got a good track record on that now, and that was from the Tanama River Bridge. You hired a consultant, a third party, to, lack of a better term, to oversee Peter Kiewit's execution of that contract. Do you have a similar person lined up to ride shotgun over this dock project?
Mr. O'Leary.
The chair, Senator Bishop. At this point, we're still in discussions internally as to what the most effective way to do it. But to your point, yes, we are quite adept at larger projects at the Alaska Railroad. So see no reason why this one would be markedly different.
I would like to add, Mr. Chairman, that project came in under budget on that bridge across the Tanana River, so that's why I just say I brought that up. Do you have a sinking fund component built into this dock, so in the future when you do have to replace it, you might come back for some more bonding authority, but not as much.
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, no, that's not really contemplated at this particular point. It is more, as the dock would progress along, having rates and charges in place through the long-term agreement with Royal Caribbean to certainly pay the debt service at this particular point. And I would foresee the same model being used in 50 years to when this dock needs to be replaced.
And just last question.
Senator Bishop.
So I just want to ask along Senator Hoffman's line of questioning, this floating dock design we're going with, is this a one-off or has this been replicated around the world with a track record?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop, perhaps Mr. Carnahan can speak a little bit more about what's been used around the world at this point. I will tell you that the constructor on this is a group that has done extensive work in Alaska and has built really, I don't know if it's the majority, but certainly a large percentage of the cruise docks that have been built recently, Ward Cove in Ketchikan, Icy Strait in Huna, and others. So they're well adept at the construction of they're good at what they do. They are very comfortable with this design in for Seward and the unique attributes that Seward has.
I guess the question I have is that are they involved with the Port of Anchorage support as well?
Senator Olson, no.
Thank you. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Well, I'm sorry. Maybe we should have Mr. Carnahan go ahead and talk about the question that was there before by Senator Bishop about are there any other ports like this that Royal Caribbean goes to that has the same kind of setup with a floating dock versus a fixed dock?
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. So Alaska is unique, and this is a uniquely Alaska solution with a proven approach that, as Mr. O'Leary alluded to, a number of recent facilities have been built in Alaska. The one in Seward, the difference is this is a turnaround port,
meaning the passengers will get on and off. And so the design reflects that this facility is really more robust and more upgraded than what we would find in the ports of call, which are very capable piers. But this is an enhanced design that will allow us to turn around passengers as well as make it a port of call.
Senator Stedman.
I was wondering if you could kind of give us an idea, because we don't have much as much information as we'd like, that reference to Senator Hoffman's question, but the scale dealing with this proposed dock relative to the Ward Cove dock in Ketchikan, for instance, or the dock at Icy Straits in Hoonah?
Mr. Carnahan.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman. So I'm familiar with both of those facilities. They're very well built by the same constructor. The difference would be that those facilities are intended for ports of call, which means they don't require as much space. The ship does not need to have all of its access hatches available in those ports of call. So at the facility in Seward, the proposal is that we would have all of the hatches available. The dock is wider. It sits deeper, so it has more ability to be stable than the ports of call. Does that answer your question?
Senator Stedman.
Pretty much. So the width is wider, and then the length is similar to the like Ward Cove dock?
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, it's longer. So the ships that this is designed for, the larger ships in Alaska, not just for our brand, but for all different cruise lines. And the dock is long enough to accommodate the full width of all of the access hatches.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman.
Can this dock then be used for the military, for aircraft carriers and other large naval vessels that may be in need of a port in Alaska?
Mr. Carnahan.
Chair Senator Stedman, I'm not familiar with the specifications of those other military ships.
Follow Senator Stedman.
Well, it would be nice when they come back, if they can come back with that information also. Well, we are facing a military buildup in the North Pacific, and a dock of this magnitude may very well accommodate that. I think the dock in Ketchikan might also, from what I've heard.
Senator Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. O'Leary, Mr. Carnahan, I've asked this question 2 years ago, and I'd be not doing my duty if I didn't ask it again. So the question I asked 2 years ago, if there is, God forbid, another pandemic, and the cruise lines are shut down, I asked you, Mr. O'Leary, could you float the debt for a year? Did you have the cash flow? And I think the answer was yes 2 years ago at 65. Is the answer still the same at 135?
Mr.
And O'Leary. Do you have a contingency built in there on that?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Bishop. So if a situation, a hypothetical like that were to come to pass, of course, we would first look to the long-term agreement that we would have with Royal Caribbean that is a guarantee. So even if no ships were calling, there would be a requirement that the payments, minimum payments, would still be made to the railroad. If for some unforeseen reason that were not to come to pass, I'm confident that the railroad for a year could handle the, use the term, float the debt service. Yes.
Bob, Senator Bishop. Okay, Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. O'Leary, we talked in Transportation Committee about a little bit of the funding package and the open-ended question about up to $30 million in equity, reducing the possible debt, but obviously a bigger cash burn from the railroad. Does the answer to Senator Bishop's question change if the railroad ends up in the financing package putting in the maximum quantity of cash you're discussing?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Keel. I think right now the railroad is planning on, again, putting $30 million, which again is comprised of improvement fees that we have collected to this point since 2022 and will collect through 2025. That comprises that $30 million. And that is our plan to put that in as the cash component of the payment to purchase the asset.
Follow-up, Senator Keough.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Just maybe a little down the road that Senator Stedman was asking about, you know, were we to bring something the size of an aircraft carrier, assuming it could come to the dock, I suspect that our constraint, if the water's deep enough, will be the gangway, and there's tremendous benefits to a floating dock, but you can only get stuff so heavy on them before you have to rebuild or reballast or change the pilings. Can you talk about the capacity the railroad will have? Let's imagine either great military customers or the industry goes to, you know, all 6,100 passenger ships, of which there are only a few today, and you need to bring 50-foot vans of luggage down there instead of 40-foot. But what is the capacity to handle that sort of growth in weight across the dock?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, I'll make one statement, and then I'd probably like to pass this to our chief engineer if he has an opinion on this at this point. But the design being considered right now, it's going to be built, will address the largest cruise ships that are in Alaska at this particular point going forward. And again, Mr. Carnahan could probably speak to that.
Mr. Carnahan.
Through the chair, Senator Keel, this dock will safely accommodate any ships that exist today and are contemplated in the future, including the 6,000 plus passenger ships that our company owns. But to be clear, we do not intend to bring those to Seward at this time, not because of infrastructure reasons. It's just not something commercially we're looking at doing.
Senator Keel, do you want to hear from the chief engineer?
Mr. Chairman, that'd be great. And also about the just the connection ship to shore, which is often a difficult point for handling mass.
Brian Lindemuth, Alaska Railroad Chief Engineer. Just so I'm clear, can you repeat the question?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The question was about the capacity of both the dock and its gangways to handle dramatic increases in the loads that have to come across them at any given point. So whether that be military cargo, which can be exceedingly heavy, or industry growth within the cruise industry.
Through the chair, we're in the process currently with Royal Caribbean's designers to not only fully analyze, but potentially optimize that a little bit. The dock itself, as it stands today, is basically designed for highway load. And that's both the gangway, the trestle going out to the gangway, and the float itself. The float itself is designed such that if we need to increase capacity later, it's basically all on the deck. We would have to increase the thickness of the deck, but that can be done at any given time. We're working with the designers right now, analyzing the gangway itself, and we're expecting to probably beef that up a little bit. But we don't have any significant concerns over the proposed weights on it that we see in the foreseeable future. It will not obviously take the same amount of weight as our freight dock, but our freight dock was designed specifically for heavy duty freight. This dock has been designed for more light to medium duty freight, and we certainly have the ability to upgrade it if for some reason the market changes and we need to.
Okay. Follow up.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Mr. Leary, can you help us a little bit with the impact on the railroad if we're going to put two large cruise ships and offload them? How is the railroad looking at future expansions to move those visitors to Anchorage or wherever they're going to, if they're going to turn the ships around, turn the, I guess, the visitors around? Talk to us a little bit about how you plan on dealing with that.
Senator Stedman, yes. I mean, that is it's a significant concern, just the general infrastructure, excluding the dock in South Central Alaska as to how to start to address the larger ships coming in at this point, and especially if there are two larger ships in place. Now, our understanding is those are not necessarily planned for in the immediate future, but we are building, this dock will be built for the capacity of having the two larger ships. The railroad is looking to expand its passenger fleet at this point to with the growth of the visitor industry in general, but the cruise market in specific on this, both out of Seward. There appears to be growth, significant growth planned out of Whittier also. And so it's really looking at, our first step is really to optimize the existing assets we have and make sure we're using those in the most appropriate fashion. And that could entail everything from schedule changes to moving different assets, different rail cars to different routes. But I don't think at the end of the day, my sense is that we will need to add rail cars, passenger rail cars to our passenger coaches to this system to appropriately address everybody that wants to come out of come off the ships in Seward, come off the ships in Whittier, and get to wherever their next destination is.
Follow up?
Yeah, just to put a finer point on it. So we understand that the railroad's going to have to expand to facilitate the increase in visitors into Seward and somehow get them to Anchorage. I assume that's where they're going to fly in and out of if they're going to change people. So is the railroad contemplating any capital needs that may have to come before the legislature? Or do you have the current financial capacity to deal with it as a standalone entity without our assistance?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Stedman, our most fervent desire and goal would be to handle this internally to the railroad using the different tools we have available and not come to the legislature for that.
Any further questions from the members of the committee? If not, we will go on to our next invited testimony. That's Kat Sorensen, City of Seward City Manager. Ms. Sorensen, please come on up and identify yourself.
Hello. Sorry. For the record, Kat Sorensen, City Manager of Seward.
Okay, go ahead with your testimony.
Thank you. I'm speaking today in strong support of SB 105. This bill represents a crucial investment in the future of our community and the broader economic prosperity of Alaska. There are a multitude of reasons why the City of Seward supports this project, but I'll take a minute to highlight a few of them. The proposed cruise terminal is not merely a facility for tourists. It is a space designed and planned for year-round community use. Improving the large facility would create a more welcoming space for our community and for our residents to celebrate one another with events like the Seward Music and Arts Festival and watch parties for local Olympians like Lydia Jacoby. This project ensures that the terminal serves as a vibrant hub for all residents, fostering a sense of belonging and community spirit. The employment opportunities generated by cruise ship operations are invaluable as well, bringing both seasonal and year-round employees to our city. Seward is also very excited about the inclusion of shore power infrastructure, which would add a large ratepayer to our locally owned electric utility, helping to ease the burden of our smaller utility ratepayers and contributing to overall energy sustainability in our community. We've been working and having discussions about what we need to do on our end as the owners and managers of our local utility to provide that shore power to the ships that dock in Seward. Alongside Alaska Railroad's investment in the passenger dock, they have been investing in our freight dock through expansion and corridor improvements, furthering their commitment to Seward as a working port. It is critical to authorize this bond. The current facility is nearing the end of its useful life, and any changes to the service it provides would severely impact Seward and businesses throughout the state. SB 105 is not just about a new dock. It's about investing in the future of Alaska, supporting our residents, and fostering economic prosperity that reverberates throughout Alaska. I urge you to swiftly pass this bill for the betterment of our community and the state as a whole.
Ms. Sorensen. Ms. Sorensen.
Hello.
Please slow down so we can kind of keep up with your thought process as we're going through the presentation, going through this bill.
Oh, okay.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee? Senator Stedman.
Yes, I was wondering if you could help us with the capacity that Seward has. I'm not familiar with your utility and the ownership of your utility or even the supply of electricity into the community. So I think we need to be briefed on that, and maybe you have a synopsis and then get back to the committee in more detail. Dealing with the ability to plug in two ships simultaneously at the dock.
So currently our utility is owned by the municipality of Seward, by the city of Seward. And we purchase our power from Chugach Electric. We are in the process of a infrastructure project that would help us to increase and meet the demands of the cruise ships when they arrive. So we've been working with the railroad to figure out what we need on our end and have been installing and upgrading our infrastructure throughout the community.
Follow-up, Senator Stedman.
I think, Mr. Chairman, I think we need more information on this because I would expect that we may get a request from the utility or the community for financial assistance, just like we're getting requests from the city of Ketchikan, Whittier area, Skagway. They all want help in electrifying the ships because they need to be electrified. I think we need to have an idea what the total package is going to cost so we can figure out how we can facilitate the development.
For sure. Mr. O'Leary, you want to comment on that concern that we have? Has that been built into the thought process that the railroad has related to the $135 million that you're asking for?
Senator Olson, the railroad supports shore power there. We think it's definitely the right thing to do for a number of different reasons out there, and certainly we'll continue to work with the city of Seward and the developer on this to, make that a reality because we think it's very important.
Okay. Can we get the information that Senator Stedman was talking about what specifically for that electrification?
Senator Olson, yes, we'll work with the city of Seward to prepare that.
Any further questions by members of the committee for the two gentlemen in front of us? If not, I guess just so I have a concept of what's going on, once you get the floating dock, we see the picture of it here. What's going to happen with a fixed dock? Are you still going to be able to use that to have some of the smaller vessels coming on and tying up?
Senator Olson, no. The existing passenger dock will be demolished.
Okay.
But we will, of course, have our freight dock, which mm-hmm. is, there. And again, which as I already mentioned, is subject. We have a $25 million project funded at this point to, lengthen and widen that dock.
Okay. And now, right now, is the coal dock being used at all?
Senator Olson, no. I think every so often we may, if there's extra ships in the harbor and they're used for tie-up, but I think that's primarily the use at this point.
Senator Merrick has a question.
Thank you, Chair Olson. My question is, I'm not very familiar with the difference between light to medium freight and heavy freight. And if for some reason the Port of Alaska was to go down, would light to medium freight cover our food security issues?
Mr. O'Leary.
Through the chair, Senator Merrick, and certainly, again, Brian Lindemood, our chief engineer, would be probably better to speak about this, but I will say we have been in discussions with some of the steamship carriers as to, in the case of an emergency where the Port of Alaska was, unavailable, could our facilities in Seward be of use for this? And I think the answer is yes. It would. It certainly would not have the level of efficiency that you would have at the Port of Anchorage, but in a pinch, it certainly could. Again, and I'm talking about the freight dock here.
Mr. Lindemood, would you mind commenting on the question that was asked by Senator Merrick?
Through the chair, certainly. The proposed dock, the proposed passenger dock, will certainly take any of the freight that's currently being handled by Tote or Matson, which is primarily your foodstuffs and so forth like that. Logistically speaking, it would probably be easier to handle them at the freight dock, but we would be able to handle them at either.
Thank you.
All up, Senator Merrick.
Yep. Thank you, Mr.
Senator Stedman.
think we got to think about this. I don't think there's any cranes on this dock. Are you going to install cranes on this dock?
Mr. O'Leary.
Senator Olson, or through the chair, Senator Stedman, not to the best of my knowledge, no.
Okay, so I think it would be a little inefficient with Tote and other carriers, I would imagine. But I think that's another question that we need to consider here at the table when we look at the Anchorage port and Whittier and Seward. We have Whittier and we have Seward as backups for Anchorage. And quite frankly, I think there's some aspects of both those ports that are they exceed the attractiveness of Anchorage, particularly Whittier being deep and ice free. So I think that's something that we need to take a look at some point.
And a comment on that, Mr. O'Leary?
Through the chair, no, not really, other than, you know, certainly we have marine assets in Whittier, we have marine assets in Seward, and we are delighted to talk with anybody at any time about, you know, proposed uses for them.
Senator Wilson.
Yes, Mr. Chair, I would be remiss if the co-chair didn't also mention the wonderful port of Matsu.
Thank you very much for that reminder, Senator Wilson. There's no more further questions of the gentleman at the head of the table. We'll have the city manager for Seward comment on some of the questions we've had. Ms. Sorensen, are you still on, ma'am?
Through the chair, yes, I'm still here.
Do you remember some of the issues that Senator Stedman brought up, and do you have any other another perspective on some what the answers might be for those concerns?
I would also like to add that Whittier, while Whittier is an ice-free port, so is Seward year-round as well. So we are a deep water ice-free port. And looking through the shore power issues in the future, I will we've been working to get that infrastructure in place and can find some more definitive numbers for you. In addition to those other questions, I don't, if you could repeat them as well, that would be great.
Okay, if there are no further questions for by members of the committee, I'd like to open it up to public testimony. If you have anybody in the room that wants to go ahead and testify. Do we have anybody online that wants to go ahead and testify on this issue? With that, we're going to go ahead and close public testimony. We'll set this bill aside. To be heard at a later date as we get ready for Senate Bill 125, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation Sustainable Energy by the Governor. This bill was heard on February 8th, adopted as a committee substitute. We took public testimony. I want to just thank the gentleman for coming on up this morning and going through this intensive issues that we have concerns about. Thank you for coming.
Thank you, Chairman. Appreciate the opportunity.
Okay. Going back to Senate Bill 125, we have a committee substitute in front of us. Amendments were asked by members of the committee and have been incorporated into this committee substitute. Is there a motion? Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move the Senate Finance Committee adopt committee substitute for Senate Bill 125, Work Order 33GS1074. /S as in Sitka as our working document.
Thank you. I will object for reasons for discussion. Ken Alper from my staff will explain the changes that will come into this with the committee substitute. Mr. Alper, please identify yourself for the record and go ahead and tell us what the changes are and what effect they have on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Ken Alper, staff to the Senate Finance Committee. As you may recall, when we last heard this bill on February 8th, there was a committee substitute that made a more substantive change that took out a fund structure that had been incorporated in the original bill, which was intended to eliminate the request for an initial state capitalization of $20 million in general funds. The new committee substitute before you that Senator Keel just moved to adopt makes a single small change that is in response to a question that Senator Keel asked during testimony on February 8th on the ability of this new so-called Green Bank to support a project that might be producing the power out of state for the purpose of delivering it within the state. I believe he was contemplating Canadian origin power. So the single change made in the bill on page 2, line 23 of the new CS adds "or delivered to the state" language as a mechanism to ensure that the Housing Finance Corporation, that the new Green Bank, could accommodate that sort of power project. And that's the only change, Mr. Chairman.
Any further questions on the committee substance by members of the committee? If not, I'll go ahead and remove my objection. What we have before us is version S. Is there any discussion by members of the committee or questions on by members of the committee for Mr. Alper? If not, go ahead and thank you very much, Mr. Alper, for coming up and telling us the changes. I'll invite Stacy Barnes. Please come on up and from the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation's comment on some of the changes that have been brought forward is in this new committee substitute. You may not have any comment, but I'd just like to know what the AHFC has to go ahead and say about this.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman. For the record, my name is Stacy Barnes. I'm the Director of Government Relations and Public Affairs for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. However, if you don't mind, Mr. Chairman, I'd like to turn it over to Ike Gilopsis, our Deputy Executive Director, who is online in Anchorage to answer questions on this bill.
Mr. Gilopsis, are you on, sir?
Good morning, Chair Olson. Is the audio coming through to your satisfaction?
You're loud and clear.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson. For the record, my name is Ike Gilopsis, and I'm with the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. The corporation is supportive of the changes that the committee has made to Senate Bill 125 and stand ready to answer any questions that the committee may have.
Do we have any questions by members of the committee for Mr. Gilopsis? We don't have any questions, Mr. Gilopsis, so thank you very much for coming out this morning and being available for the AHFC's perspective on the committee substitute that just come out.
Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Call the Senate Finance Committee meeting back together. Want to thank AHFC for coming forward this morning and give us their perspective on this bill, which is an important bill. But at this time, we'll go ahead and set this bill aside and go on to our next bill, which is Senate Bill 205. This is the first hearing for Senate Bill 205. I'd like to have invited testimony come on up, Emma Torkelson and Stacy Barnes, and tell us about the bill and what the objective is the goals to have on this bill. Please identify yourself for the record and go ahead with your presentation. Ms. Torkelson, I think you're leading off.
Thank you, Co-Chair Olson and members of the Senate Finance Committee. Emma Torkelson, staff to Senator Kaufman. Thank you again for the opportunity to speak to this bill, and Senator Kaufman does apologize again for not being present. AHFC owns more than 1,600 units of public housing in 13 communities across the state. Anchorage currently serves as the maintenance hub for all facilities and a staging ground for both people and supplies headed to other communities. For years, Anchorage maintenance personnel have relied on shipping containers located around the city to meet storage needs for operations. However, in the last several years, these containers have become attractive targets for vandalism, break-ins, theft of equipment, and materials. HFC has been renting a large building and associated property at 700 Bergaw Street in Anchorage since September 2023. They are now in position to purchase the property, and pursuant to statutes, they must obtain legislative authority to do so. This location has Class C office space, a warehouse and fenced storage yard and parking. Ownership will offer several opportunities to HFC. They'll be able to build housing rental office on the property. They'll be able to provide warehouse space for equipment and material storage, reducing reliance on those shipping containers. Maintenance staff will benefit from the building's adequate staging space, and staff from around the state will be able to meet in a single location for training. Overall, acquisition of the property will help address the maintenance needs of its aging housing portfolio in Anchorage and allow them to more efficiently prepare for both routine and emergent needs in other communities. AHFC's public housing department has verified with the U.S. Department of Housing and Urban Development that federal funds available for the are available for the purchase through AHFC's existing Moving to Work program, plan. Together with the sale of existing assets, AHFC has adequate funds to purchase the facility. And with that, concludes my introductory comments. I'm happy to go through the sectional here, although it's only two sections as well.
Let's take some questions first. Do we have any questions by the bill sponsor for this bill that's in front of us? I've got a couple of questions, Mr. Torkelson. As far as the vandalism that you're concerned about, you referred to in your opening statement, how is this going to change whether you have vandals invest the place or not just by change of ownership? Is there going to be a change to the security system that's going to be related to that or something like that?
To the chair, Senator Olson, Stacey Barnes can speak to that better. This ownership of this facility allows them to bring in, stop using some of those shipping containers. Those have been the source of vandalism. As far as I know, this building has not seen vandalism done to it. It's those sort of extra shipping containers around the city that they would seek to pull into this facility.
Ms. Barnes, do you want to go and answer the question, or do you want to wait till after the sectional analysis?
Mr. Chairman, I'm happy to answer the question now, and I do have some prepared comments if you're comfortable with me going through those as well.
For sure. Identify yourself for the record, though.
For the record, Mr. Chairman, my name is Stacey Barnes. I'm the Director of Government Relations and Public Affairs for Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. Our Chief Executive Officer, Brian Butcher, is also on the phone to answer questions along with other members of our staff if I can't answer questions from the committee. But we thank you all for hearing Senate Bill 205 today in Senate Finance. We also thank Senator Kaufman for bringing the bill forward. We really do see the opportunity to take ownership of the 700 Bergaw space as an opportunity to create new safety opportunities for our employees, as well as for the properties that we care for through our public housing portfolio. The new facility, to answer your question, Mr. Chairman, is both gated and has a fence around the building itself. So as Ms. Torkelson pointed out, we have not had any issues in the new location, whereas our current public housing assets are spread throughout the city of Anchorage. We do have connexes outside of some of our larger public housing facilities and temporary buildings that serve as storage for much of our maintenance facilities. I think that it would be helpful, Mr. Chairman, if you don't mind, for me to talk a little bit about the structure of public housing. And in 1971, Alaska Housing Finance Corporation was, of course, created by the Alaska State Legislature. However, another organization, the Alaska State Housing Authority, or ASHA, which was in the former Department of Community and Regional Affairs, is where the public housing started across the state. A 1992 merger of ASHA brought the public housing portfolio into AHFC, where today we now serve 11,000 individuals, men, women, and children, in public housing through a combination of two programs. One of those programs is with housing vouchers, and that allows for individuals who income qualify to rent in the private rental market. And the other is in public housing, where we actually own and operate units. We have more than 1,600 units spread throughout 13 communities in the state. and 1,000 of our public housing units are outside of the Anchorage area. And so we went to competitive RFP to try to acquire a maintenance space that would be more acceptable for the kinds of challenges that we've been having with our aging housing stock. And we had one bidder, and that speaks to the timeline that's there in front of you, Mr. Chairman. We were requesting a minimum of 13,000 square feet of both warehouse and office space. The bidder that responded to our RFP was able to offer 40,000 square feet, and that really allowed us to reimagine what we could do with our public housing assets, looking beyond Anchorage and how we could better support the statewide public housing assets that we have. And so many of the public housing that we have may be familiar to many of you on the committee: Cedar Park here in Juneau, Seaview Terrace in Ketchikan, Bethel Heights, Willowa Manor, Wasilla. Golden Towers is a senior property in Fairbanks, and we've got Varying View for families, of course, in Nome. But many people don't recognize that we also have a number of duplexes and triplexes in our portfolio, and those are aging as well in this environment. So Senate Bill 205 will allow us to address a number of things, including the affordable housing challenges that exist all across the state. One of the challenges that our maintenance teams are struggling with right now is that it is increasingly taking longer to turn units and be able to get families into those units because the lack of space that we had prior to assuming renter, prior to becoming renters of this facility at 700 Bregaw has been a struggle for us. And so when we think about addressing affordable housing in the state, we're really doing that in our public housing department in three different ways. One is by putting more housing vouchers into our communities. One is by recognizing the landlords who are participating with the voucher program and in the private sector. But the third, of course, is taking care of the stock that we already own, which is what this building is all about. And we talked a little bit about the connexes and the temporary sheds that we have throughout the city. We actually have had to use public housing units as well to provide some overflow for some of the storage and maintenance needs that we've had. And the building that we had at 1525 Boniface did attract a number of vandals who were both tagging and breaking into the office space, but also into the vehicles that we have, where we've got some very specialized tools and that kind of thing. So with the RFP that we went forward with, we were able to realize a number of amenities through the rental process. One is that we now have access to a hydraulic lift and loading bay. This means that we are going to be able to increase the materials that we have in our new maintenance space and in the warehouse. We'll be able to load those connexes and actually prepare them to go out to some of our coastal communities with better planning and foresight for the needs that exist there. We'll have more warm storage that will be available to us. We also have dedicated office space that will create better collaboration for our employees on the property management side of public housing, as well as with the maintenance personnel. We'll be able to visit with tenants directly and provide a confidential space for them to ask questions and receive case management. And we're also very excited about the training opportunities that exist for us in this warehouse facility. We will have dedicated space for training. We have about 50 maintenance personnel all across the state. They're generalists. And so they may come in with a particular set of skills, but they may need some additional training on cabinetry or plumbing or that kind of thing. We're going to be able to offer that. And through conversations we've already had with AvTech, we're very much looking forward to bringing them in and providing that upskill, not only for existing employees with AHFC, those who we hope to recruit, but also through our partners with regional housing authorities and others across the state. And so I acknowledge that many of our employees now have to go into dark connexes. Gone will be the days where they are fiddling with padlocks late into the evening when they are responding to the maintenance needs that certainly happen outside of the 8 to 5 hours on Monday through Friday, but late into the night when they have to respond to many of those emergencies. And so, Mr. Chairman, I just like to wrap by saying that we do have federal funds for this effort that are available to us. We are seeking no more than $9 million for a capital purchase of the building. And in addition to that, we're looking at $200,000 in operating costs. And as we look toward the future and owning the facility, we'll be able to make even greater investments into the public housing assets that we have. Among those is removal of those temporary storage units and connexes across the state, across the city of Anchorage. We'll also be able to invest in backup generators and be able to store them at this location. And so that will allow us to create a greater focus, particularly for our properties that serve seniors and Alaskans with disabilities. We'll be able to broaden our vendor list to achieve better pricing on bulk materials. We'll increase our inventory and better be able to standardize the parts and components that go into the 1,600 units that we have. We'll transition those three public housing units that we've been utilizing for maintenance needs back into the public housing stock. And, of course, we're looking forward to greater collaboration with organizations like AVTEC, but also with the Department of Public Safety and others who have expressed an interest in collaborating with AHFC as well. And Mr. Chairman, that concludes my remarks. Thank you for the opportunity to speak to the merits of Senate Bill 205.
Senator Wilson has a question.
Yes, thank you, and good morning, Ms. Barnes. Great to see you here today at Senate Finance. This building is built in the 70s, and it used to be the old Alaska Club, and I knew that it was in this sort of disrepair and has been remodeled since 2014. Is this a building, is just in the nature of the building, going to be suitable for your current needs? Are you currently using this building for what you are hoping to continue to use it for? I know that you guys are renting it now, but is there not another building that might be better suited for the $9 million price tag in this municipal of Anchorage?
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, thank you for that question. One of the more recent tenants in the building was actually BP. And so they invested in some significant tenant improvements that were very appropriate for the kind of work that we are looking to do, to include that hydraulic lift that I was talking about. Following that rental, Bailey's Furniture was in there as well, and also put in some racking, which will allow us to store more materials there. Bailey's left that behind when they exited the building. And so when we went to RFP and this property came forward, we were very excited about what it provided for us. And when we were first thinking about what was available in Anchorage and how we could serve the needs of our community, we really saw the benefit that the extra square footage, the warehouse space, and other amenities provided to be able to respond to the needs all across the state.
Bob, Senator Wilson?
Just as a follow-up to that, then that leads to my next question, sir, about the concern about that area, because I understand there's not a sort of anchor tenant or any tenants in the Northway Mall. Some of those other vacant buildings have been vandalized, and I don't know. I haven't talked to DNR to see if their facility have had any additional sort of accostments or anything else that may be in that area. And as of now, you said that there's no area, but do you know of any of your surrounding neighbors or any other activity of damage of property just because of the sort of the, I don't want to say the derelict of some of those other properties further down the street?
Ms. Barnes.
Through the chair, Senator Wilson, I'm not personally aware of any other damage or vandalism that has occurred in close proximity to our building. I do understand we have not had any issues with it. However, I think that it is also worth noting that this particular facility, and when we went to RFP, we were looking for warehouse space in this area because it is very close to many of our public housing properties and the units that we're looking to maintain. And so in your packet today, there is a map that shows within a 1 mile, a 2 mile, and a 5 mile radius, the number of public housing units that we have in proximity to the building. And Mr. Chairman, I'm not sure if there's anyone on the phone in Anchorage, Mr. Butcher or others, who would like to add further response to that question.
Mr. Butcher, are you on, sir?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, this is Brian Butcher, CEO, Executive Director of the Alaska Housing Finance Corporation. I think Stacey did a pretty good job of that. I will note that in the previous areas that we had been doing a lot of work and storing a lot of things, they tended to be in darker, more remote places, which I think lent itself to potential break-ins. The fact that it's on Brigaw, that it's right on a major road, a well-lit area of that community, I think, as well as the fencing around it, lends itself to less of a likelihood of break-ins than we've seen in our other areas.
Follow up, Senator Wilson. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ms. Barnes, I appreciate the vision for the use here and the efficiency of a statewide facility. I guess the question I'm not real clear on is a process question. How did you figure out that this was the best or the cheapest or best suited facility in Anchorage? The context for my question is that there was a rectangle on a map when you were looking for 13,000 square feet. It was maybe a third of Anchorage, maybe a half of Anchorage's industrial areas. Was there another RFP when you decided to look for that 40,000 was a better fit and there was a better vision? Did you look at the rest of what's available in that community?
Ms. Barnes, you want to answer that question, or am I going to deflect that to Mr. Butcher?
Through the chair, perhaps a little bit of both. Senator Keel, when we went to RFP, we asked for a minimum of 13,000 square feet, and we were very intentional about seeking a warehouse and office space that was going to be in close proximity to the public housing units that we manage and are responsible for in Anchorage. And so that very clearly was a part of it. And with that, Mr. Chairman, if we could turn it over to Mr. Butcher for any comments he might like to add.
Mr. Butcher, you want to go ahead and fill in the details on that question?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Chairman. This is Brian Butcher again. When we did take a look at the property, we saw a lot of opportunities that we might not have been thinking about a couple of years earlier when we were considering what the next step might be. As an example, since the pandemic has started, we've seen very serious supply chain issues with most of the materials that and home builders are going through the statewide as well, where you're seeing things that could have been that would have been ordered 5 years ago and you would have received it in 2 weeks or 3 weeks that you're now looking at 4 months or 5 months. The additional area we quickly realized would allow us to purchase them ahead of time and have them available for when we need them in our 1,600 units across the state, in particular when we're dealing with the areas outside of Anchorage, where if we have it already in our warehouse, it's so much easier to get out than it would be with a 4 to 6 month wait, which would not only slow the opportunity to get a turnaround for our units, but also stop a lot of Alaskans that need help on the wait list from being moved in because it's going to take a slower period of time. We also realized that there would be benefits to a lot of our partners. And as an example, I've had a preliminary conversation with Public Safety Commissioner Cockrell, who has really seen benefits to DPS of that particular area that is not only not too far from DPS, but also provides more storage area than they have. That's something that if we own the building, we can probably make the changes that would need to be made to work with some of our partners on it as compared to just leasing.
Follow-up, sir.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Butcher, again, I appreciate the change in vision, but that's exactly the question. When the shift went from an Anchorage area maintenance facility to a statewide facility where you can containerize things and whatnot, why not then go out and look at the Ship Creek industrial area, most of which was excluded from the initial RFP, or the airport industrial area, which was completely excluded from the initial RFP, Or if you want to get close to DPS, how about the Dowling industrial area, which was excluded from the initial RFP? Don't mean to be critical of the change in vision here. The question is, why didn't you look at the rest of your options in Anchorage?
Mr. Butcher.
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Brian Butcher again. A couple different reasons. One is we were looking at trying to keep it close to the proximity of our units. We've got between 600 and 700 units in Anchorage. The majority of them are very close to this area of town. And obviously, the farther our maintenance folks would have to drive, the more delayed a lot of their work would be. We also were looking to have it on a bus route, to have it, the availability for transportation to be that. So when we went out, we were thinking about the bare minimum we needed, which was areas for our maintenance staff to be able to get work done that were being done in connexes outside and basements. And that's why we listed a minimum of 13,000 square feet. But we anticipated that hopefully there would be a larger space than that. And so we only had one respondent, and I think probably a big reason is we were looking for an area in the part of town that we'd be able to most easily utilize it for the good of the majority of the housing units that we manage in Anchorage.
Follow up, Senator Keel.
Mr. Chairman, I mean, I'm pretty sure just about all those industrial areas are on bus routes, so I guess my initial thought is that Anchorage tends to be a pretty short drive from Anchorage.
Okay. Senator Click, Bishop.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Butcher, I'm pretty daggone excited about this presentation. I see a lot of upside. And before I get into some comments here, have you applied a savings factor to the purchase of this property, because the centralized proximity and your react time to those properties and having everything centrally located, you know, you look at page 2, you got a wonderful laydown area there for loading connexes that's going out to rural Alaska. Page 3, your enclosed loading docks. You know, you know this thing just makes a ton of sense, I really like your classrooms, your wood shops, your heating system mock-ups. I mean, you got classroom space where you could be adjunct professors in from other university, cold climate, AvTech. This thing just makes a lot of sense. The only thing I don't see here, maybe it's not needed, you've probably thought about it, is maybe incorporating some daycare for your employees. So I support the concept.
Mr. Butcher, you want to comment on his comments?
Yes, Mr. Chairman. Senator Bishop, again, Brian Butcher. Yes, I agree with most of the comments that you made, Senator. We do see real opportunities here to be able to do a lot more than we have been able to do. And in terms of cost savings, I think we'll be able to bring those back to the committee next year when we've been in the building a little longer and have a better idea. Clearly, the economies of scale that we'll be able to receive by buying in bulk, because we have an actual place to store things, is going to be immediate benefit. Also of benefit, and we haven't really gone too much in detail on this, is the difficulty we've had attracting and retaining maintenance employees. And statewide, I think we're all seeing challenges with that. But it's really difficult when you see some of the conditions that our maintenance folks have to work in to work on our units. I believe with a tremendous amount of certainty that we're going to see it a more attractive job to take, and we're also going to see us being able to retain them a lot more. And as you might imagine, the more experience we have with our maintenance team, the easier and the faster and at a higher quality the work is done. So we're excited about that aspect.
Thank you very much, Mr. Butcher. Next question is from Senator Hoffman.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Butcher, it's good to see that the major facility is going to be located in Anchorage, and there are 500 to 700 units. I'm a little bit skeptical of how this unit can be utilized by other public housing gold pins throughout the state of Alaska. Could you provide my office and maybe the rest of the committee of whether where are those other gold pins located throughout the state of Alaska? And a broader question that is raised by this is the do you have an inventory of the public housing needs for the rest of the state that that can be provided to the committee? I know I've seen some dated ones, but provide that updated list to the rest of the committee, because as was stated at this table and by this administration, housing in general, whether it be for VPSOs, for troopers, for teachers, and for the general public, is of great demand for unhoused people throughout the state of Alaska. So I'd appreciate that information so we can have a better understanding of how the current units are going to be addressed, but on a bigger scale, what are we doing and what are the needs of the rest of the people of Alaska regarding public housing? Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Butcher, you think you can get that information to us? We spread it, give it to us?
Yeah, yes, Mr. Chairman. This is Brian Butcher again. We would be happy to provide that to the committee.
Okay. Senator Keel.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Would also appreciate any appraisal document that AHFC has. The taxman is certainly fallible, but when I look it up on the Anchorage site, it looks like it's assessed at $5 million. So it'd be good to know how we got to $9 million, just so that we have some third-party eyes on that.
Mr. Butcher, you want to comment on that difference in appraisal values?
Yes, Mr. Chairman, Senator Keel. We'll get the information we have. To let you know, the $9 million figure is a figure we hope to come in under. What we didn't want to do is go back to the committee a year from now and say that we need authorization for additional funds because we underestimated and were in a position that we couldn't utilize a bill that potentially had already passed.
Well, Senator Keel.
Nope, thank you.
Nope, thank you. Thank you very much for that. One of the questions I have, Mr. Butcher, as we look at the fiscal note, which is pretty much all federal funds, it doesn't talk about the savings that come from not having to pay the rent currently. How much are you paying currently for the rent on the building?
Through the chair, Brian Butcher again, Senator Hoffman, we are paying about $785,000 a year initially. Over the course of the lease, it will go up. And I think that we'll, as I've mentioned earlier, once we're in the property and see what our actual utilities costs and maintenance costs are, we'll probably be able to give a better idea to the committee of specifically how that plays out. A reminder, these are all federal funds, so any increase would be federal funds and any reduction would also be federal funds. And so it would be simply an opportunity for us to utilize federal fund savings in other areas.
A further question I have, Mr. Butcher, is as you look at the changing of ownership of the building, is that going to change any of the operating and maintenance costs that are going to be out there?
Through the chair, or Mr. Chairman, it may be. It's too premature. If we had been in the building for a lot of years, we would have a more accurate idea of that for the committee. But realizing that we're going to see cost savings as well as being able to make improvements to it under our ownership, we wanted to come to the legislature as soon as we could. So we've only really inhabited the building for about between 4 and 5 months. And so we haven't gone through an entire year yet.
Okay. The last question I have, Ms. Barnes talked about a hydraulic lift that was there. I'm looking at the diagram that's in the packet. I guess it looks like it's a fixed hydraulic lift that's there. What's the advantage of having that over, say, something that can lift it like a loader that can lift the connexes or even just a regular forklift that's much more mobile than a hydraulic lift that's fixed in place?
Mr. Chairman, Brian Butcher again. We'll get you more detail on that. I'll admit, off the top of my head, I can't give you the specifics on that.
Ms. Barnes, you want to comment on the question? And if you're not familiar with it, that's fine, too.
We'll be happy to follow up with you, Mr. Chairman.
Appreciate that. Okay, any further questions by members of the committee for the bill sponsor or the AHFC representative here? If not, we're going to open up the public testimony. Anybody in the room wish to testify on this bill? Is there anybody online that wants to go ahead and testify on this bill? It looks like we don't have anybody, so we'll go ahead and close public testimony. We'll set this bill aside. Thank you very much for coming up this morning. That concludes our agenda today. Next hearing is going to be tomorrow morning, February 28th at 9 a.m. We'll be hearing from the Department of Transportation with an update on the State Transportation Improvement Plan, or STIP. With that, there's no other business to come before us. We're adjourned at